In winter, my father used to make skis and in summer, coffins. He received an order from Georg Elser to make a wooden box, about the size of a shoe carton, maybe, Elser said. So my father made the box. A metal worker somewhere must have made the metal casing.
The carpenter had a free workbench in the yard at Türkenstraße 59. Elsa came and asked if he could do some work there. The wooden box he worked at on the bench had all sorts of cogwheels inside it. Children are curious, and once I asked him, "What is that?" "This," he said, "is going to be a patent."
I've never been politically prominent. After reaching voting age, I always voted KPD. I told myself it was a Labour Party and they would support the workers' cause. Already in 1938, I was convinced things wouldn't stop at the Munich Agreement, that Germany would make further demands on and annex other countries, and that this would make war inevitable. In doing what I did, I wanted to prevent further bloodshed.
He advised the family in a letter not to vote for the NSDAP. And I can confirm that he would leave the room when Hitler spoke on the radio, and that he never saluted the swastika flags.
Herr Elser told us he was a cabinet maker and inventor. He rented the back half room of the second floor of our place at Türkenstraße 94. 17 marks a month, cleaning included. And one fine day, the little room was small with a narrow window, a bedside cabinet and the bed. And one fine day, I was cleaning and there, near the window at the back, was a battery. What does Elsa need a battery for, I wondered. On Sunday, I said to my husband, "Come and have a look. There's a battery in his room." There was also a clock standing there on the desk. Anyway, my husband took a look at the battery and said, smiling, "He's not going to be building a time bomb." We both laughed heartily and left the room.
My thoughts on the subject had led me to realize that the situation in Germany could only be changed by removing the present leadership, by which I mean Hitler, Göring and Goebbels. I arrived at the conviction that by removing these three men, other men would take over the government, men who would make no unacceptable demands on or annex foreign countries, and who would see to it that social conditions for the working people improved. Before November 1938, I had already decided to eliminate the leadership myself. It seemed that my only real chance would be at a gathering where all the leaders would be present. I learned from the daily press that the next meeting of the political leadership would be on November 8th and 9th, 1938, in the Bürgerbräu Keller in Munich. On November 8th, 1938, I went to the Bürgerbräu Keller and followed the course of events there. I wanted to see if and what the possibilities would be for putting my resolve into practice. In the following weeks, I gradually came round to thinking the best thing would be to pack explosives into the pillar behind the lectern and to detonate the explosives by means of some time device.
I often played cards with Elsa, and I saw him more than once in the hall of the Bürgerbräu Keller. But I never realized that he had any particular plans. Our group met on November 8, 1939, at the Franziskaner Keller, to which the Führer's speech was relayed by loudspeaker. We wanted to watch the VIPs leave, but unfortunately we were too late. The last were just going. We went into the big hall. It was almost empty. There were still a few thirsty people drinking beer. And the band members were still there, too. I'd reached the middle of the hall when there was a deafening bang. I was blasted back to the entrance. I felt blood trickling down my face. I didn't notice much of the damage in the hall, but I saw that the roof was gone and that the stars were shining in. It was then that I realized a violent explosion had occurred. 63 people were injured.
I was working as a kitchen maid at the Bürgerbräukeller. I happened to be in the kitchen that evening, but I wanted to see Hitler and the other Reich leaders. The SS man readily led me onto the balcony, to the very pillar in front of which Hitler was speaking. I drank in all the evening sights, the Führer, the excited people, the hasty departure of the leaders. It was now shortly after 9 p.m. and I had to hurry back, because after the speech everyone wanted to eat. I'd hardly reached the kitchen when the bomb exploded. Even in the kitchen, the blast was so powerful that it pressed the cook into the food lift. Next morning, the entire kitchen staff was arrested by the Gestapo. They treated us like dangerous criminals. Every morning, I was taken to the Wittelsbach Palais for interrogation. Once, in the courtyard, there was a car in which a man sat. Heavens, I suddenly thought, I know him. He often sat near the street sale window. What's up with you? I asked him. I'm in a real mess, he said. I'll never forget his melancholy look. It was Georg Elser. And when I saw his picture in the newspaper, I suddenly realized the car in the courtyard had been a trap. The Gestapo wanted to find out who knew him. And suddenly I understood why, under my name on my police file, it said, accomplice to the assassination attempt. I was terrified when I saw that. Next time I was interrogated, I burst out saying, and now you're blaming us, but it's you who should have taken more care. I was released after 8 days. I was sworn to silence and had to sign to it. I received 200 Reichmarks compensation, almost 3 months' wages.
It is true that, as director of the Criminal Investigation Department in Munich, I was in charge of investigations on the night of the assassination attempt. To begin with, Georg Elser stubbornly denied everything. I only saw him once, and I chanced to witness a particularly brutal scene that took place between him and Reichsführer SS Himmler. Violently cursing Elser, who was chained, Himmler gave him a hefty body kick. Then he had him dragged by a Gestapo interrogator unknown to me into the adjacent washroom in Gestapo headquarters. There, the interrogator used a whip or similar instrument on him till he bellowed in pain. He was then quick marched back to Himmler, who again kicked and verbally abused him. He was dragged to the washroom again, again beaten, again presented to Himmler, who kicked him again. Elser was moaning and bleeding profusely from nose and mouth, but he made no confession.
It was more or less pure chance that I found the record of Elser's interrogation. It was in 1964 when I was researching the judiciary in the Third Reich in files of the Reich Ministry of Justice, the last place one would have expected it to be, because Elser was never tried, and the state attorney's office had been instructed not to investigate the case.
State Ministry of the Interior, December 15, 1942, Munich. Injunction. On the basis of paragraph 1 of the Law on the Confiscation of Communist Wealth of May 26, 1935, and the Law on the Confiscation of Anti-National and Anti-State Wealth of July 14, 1935, in connection with the implementing order of the Führer and Reich Chancellor on the utilization of the confiscated wealth of Reich enemies of May 29, 1941, the entire wealth of Johann Georg Elser, born January 4, 1903, lately of Türkenstraße 94, Munich, is to be confiscated on behalf of the German Reich. Signed, Schäfer.
Heinrich Müller, Director, Secret State Police, Berlin, April 5, 1945. Express letter to the Commandant in person, Dachau concentration camp. Our special prisoner in protective custody, Elser, has once again been the subject of talk at the highest official level. The following instruction has been issued. At one of the next terrorist attacks on Munich or on the surrounding of Dachau, Elsa is to be reported to have met with a fatal accident. I hereby request that, as soon as this situation arises, Elsa be liquidated as unobtrusively as possible. I beg you to make sure that few people learn of this and that they be under the strictest obligation. Announcement of execution addressed to me would run as follows. On ... in connection with the terrorist attack on ... Elsa, who was being kept in protective custody, was fatally injured. After receipt and execution, I urge you to destroy this communication.